And I'll go a couple background things and look at some slides with you or some pictures of Ephesus. Now, we talked last time how this was a major city. This was a capital of the province. It's kind of, we'll see in the map in a minute, it's kind of southeast of Turkey. But of the Roman cities, this was one of the most prominent at 250,000 people. And in that day, this was a huge city. So it wasn't a small, it was a big, big place. And so we're going to look at how the ruins and the theaters they had and the things that are talked about in Scripture, all right? Acts 19, there was a giant riot because they were converting, Paul was helping convert people to Christianity. And the silversmiths, got paid for making idols to Diana, goddess Diana, or Artemis, as sometimes called, they threw a fit, and there was a riot, and there was a town square meeting, and it was a big deal. And then Paul later left Ephesus because the Christians were converting so many people in Ephesus, the people that were selling things for false religion caused a riot. Now, that's revival I'd like to see, right? I would like to see the church convert so many people that the bars got mad, or whatever you want to say. And so that would be a wonderful thing. So we see this, and we're going to look at some of these places in Ephesus. So now the book of Ephesians, we talked about the division of the first three chapters and last three chapters. It's really about this idea that what God's done for us, that we should serve God. It lines out in the first three chapters what Jesus did for us, what the Holy Spirit did for us, and the Father, what the Father's done for us, and then who we are because of that, and because of what God done for us, and the place we have as heirs with Jesus, that we should serve Him faithfully. For those reasons, because of His love, because of His work on our behalf, that we should serve Him for that reason alone. And that's a lot of the book of Ephesians in total. And you see this division here. Remember, the first few chapters are doctrinal, what God's done for you. The last few chapters are practical. In other words, God did these things for you. Therefore, your response should be this, right? Kind of like the idea we're saved by grace through faith, right? Also in Ephesians, the idea that there's God's part and man's part, and what God did for us here, now you're to live this way. That's really the book of Ephesians as a whole, okay? And so, for example, we see the dividing line in Ephesians 4:1. We saw this last time we had in class on Ephesians. He says, "There I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you." Well, the word beseech means to beg or plead strongly. "I beseech you that you walk worthy of vocation, wherewith you're called." The word vocation is summons. You've been summoned in a very, very special case. I know we sometimes talk about jury summons, where there's service to be done, and as a citizen, you go to do the jury duty because we need to have that function for justice to function in America properly. So you can have people serve on juries, so you've been summoned. This word is the same kind of word, except we've been summoned to service to God because of what God's done for us, all right? So it's more than just invitation. It means a summons is a stronger word than that. But he says, I beseech you. Paul is pleading with them. Not because he has authority in and of himself, but because of what God's done for them. I beseech you for these reasons, serve God. And so this is a dividing line. In fact, in chapter 5, verse 1, he says, "Be therefore followers of God as your children." Now, be ye therefore. Now, what's therefore mean? What's there for me? Dividing line is therefore, right? What's before therefore? The reason. What's after therefore? What you do because of, right? Isn't that how English works or how language works? When there's a therefore word, that means because of this stuff, therefore this stuff matters. Do this stuff. And that works the same way in the Bible, of course. And so Paul's making the argument by the Holy Spirit that, hey, love God, be dear children. Why? Because of all these things God did for you, right? Now, Paul can say, and he does say in this book even, "I command you," right? God commands you. But mostly you see this kind of a lighter touch in Ephesians, which is, hey, because of all these things, because of your health, because of spiritual blessing, because of the things you've been blessed with, because of these things, therefore these things, all right? And so that's pretty helpful to us, I think. Now written from prison to Ephesus, the church there, in about 60 AD. Now Paul had been ghost Ephesus, I think, three times. And then the letter that comes later, though, the letter is about after being in prison a short time, but he writes them to catch up with him. So he's been there three times. The church is established. But he writes a letter from prison after he gets to Rome later to give them advice or check up on them, because Paul wasn't someone who would just convert someone and leave him be. Paul, as he could, would check up with people and encourage them. That's a great lesson for us. If he visited them three times, then wrote a letter when he was in prison. Later, he was in prison. His life was in jeopardy. And then he would go ahead and write letters to people he'd converted for their benefit. So what does that tell us about how we should treat those who we bring to the Lord? Should we care? We sometimes think, I've seen this a lot. We think, well, I brought so-and-so to the Lord, I've done my duty, and the rest is up to them. Is that how it works? No, it's not. That if we labor to bring someone to the Lord, we should care enough to follow up. We should care enough to further help to disciple them, right? You probably wouldn't be here tonight unless someone, not only you were converted, but someone helped you learn what it was like to be faithful, right? And so this idea of going back again and again is something we see from Paul. I think it's a valuable lesson. Here we see the timeline. No verses attached to this timeline, but I think it's still valuable. He goes on his missionary journey, the first one in 46 and 47. I don't know if you can see this. I know we have a small screen, so we should probably all move up like 10 rows. Otherwise, just get, I don't know, what do they call it? A spectacle is when you, for a distance? Boom. Yeah. Get some good hunting binoculars for church. Then AD 50, you have Paul visits Ephesus on a second journey. Then in 53 through 56, you have Paul ministering to Ephesus on his third journey. You have then Paul is arrested in 57, and Paul travels to Rome, then Paul writes Ephesians. So Paul wrote four letters from prison. This is one of those, at least four we know of, maybe many more, all right? About the geography, if you talk about the Bible world and what we see in the book of Acts and the first century church, you have, of course, I want to point the wrong way. You have Rome, then way down the Aegean, you have Athens, Corinth. Then Ephesus, again, is on the southern, southwestern part of Turkey, all right? And you can't see it in this map. I think we have another one where you can see it more clearly, but then you have Miletus there. Why is Miletus a town of mention? When Paul was going to Jerusalem, the elders of Ephesus met Paul in Miletus, a port town, because he was in a hurry and they wanted to talk with Paul, or he wanted to talk with them. So letters were sent ahead. So the elders at Ephesus would meet Paul in Miletus to have a conversation with him about, and Paul warned them in Acts 20, verse 28, or around that context, about how the church was in jeopardy. Now he talks to the elders about this, and he says, listen, there are those who are going to try and destroy the flock. He goes, don't let them. In fact, he says, some of you are going to do this. Some of the elders are going to be those who will be enemies to the church in the future. And it says he wept while he talked to them. And he just knew this was coming by inspiration, so he wanted to warn them about what was right and wrong, and that he cared for the church so much he wept tears over it, right? So, again, Paul was invested in this. So we get to a few slides here about what we're going to do tonight. He mentions Acts 19, where Ephesus served as Paul's home and base of operations for 2 or 3 years. We talked last time about how Paul was there in the school of Tyrannus teaching for 2 years. He was there several months before that, teaching in the synagogue there, and so many people were converted. But it also makes a point here, and this is the reason why I think this makes sense to do this, what we're doing tonight, is that Paul being there for 2 years, do you think he would know the town very well? Do you think he would know Ephesus pretty well, right? Being there 2-3 years, he'd be someone who actually knew these places, who would have walked these streets, and that's why it's kind of interesting. I have a program that I don't have any slides of this, but one of the reasons I think this is kind of interesting to me is it shows like the current ruins, right? But there's a slider on this side, and you can pull it into what artists think an ancient rendition was like. So if it was like a Colosseum, you pull a slide over, and it reveals the artist rendition, what the artists think it would look like back then versus now. That's kind of neat. I couldn't find a slide of that because it's a kind of program kind of thing. I should have taken some screenshots, I suppose. But very interesting. Talks here about he invested a great deal of himself in the evangelism of the city, rather, which was one of the principal cities of the Roman province of Asia. In that is now the westernmost part of Turkey. From this city, members of his team took the gospel to other cities in the province. So that's kind of where it's at on the largest scheme of the map. It says Epaphras, for example, set out to evangelize Colossae, Hierapolis, and Laodicea, and also brought back word to Paul about these mission churches when his guidance was needed. It was likely from Ephesus that several of Paul's letters were written, notably 1 Corinthians. Okay, so we see towns that Epaphras was helped to evangelize. So the church Ephesus had roots that went out and tried to help other people, right? Help make other churches. Very important. All right. This is one of the scenes, or one of the slides, rather, and one of the ruins. It says, Paul made a brief stop in Ephesus to get Aquila and Priscilla settled in the city as a kind of advance guard for his mission. When he returned to stay, he would have entered through the Magnesian gate, the southeast side of the city. This, I think there are others ruins that are more interesting to me, but that's one. The entrance. Now, a short walk from there would have brought him past one of the several public bathhouses in the city of the civic Rome, the center of the city's government. So this was kind of like where the seat of the government was or was started, as you're going to walk through ancient Ephesus. Now, we're going to see how you walk through. You're going to have the marketplace. You're going to have the port eventually. And if Ephesus wasn't a huge port town, but there was an inlet from the Aegean Sea. All right, so It wasn't like a big harbor city, but there was an inlet from the Aegean where if you kept the little, well, I won't say inlet, but there's another word I'm looking for. Harbor's not the right word because it wasn't big enough, but there was access to the Aegean, and they kept it the silt from gathering and building up so they could have smaller ships come into port, but not the big ships they would have. This is some ruins of the open courtyard surrounded by columned porches, the most magnificent of which would have been the Basilica Stoa. And so this large structure is also a place where you had, this is like a two-story building would have been, where you had a lot of business gatherings and things like that. A lot of city business would have been done here in this major city of this time frame, this time period. This is also a aqueduct. The city was well supplied with water brought in by aqueducts such as this one, erected by Sextus Pollio, or Pollio, I guess, a member of the same family responsible for building the Basilica Stoa. So there was money there. These structures didn't happen overnight. They happened over a long period of time with much labor and much finance to go with that. So the idea of an ancient aqueduct was a big deal, and cities had these, but most places didn't. Most places just had some cisterns that were wells where you can go get water, or fountains that were bubbled up, and they would kind of put brick around them to give access to these fountains that came up, natural springs and things like that. But these were a major undertaking, which would bring large amounts of water from a place which was a big spring, or perhaps a place that had dammed up water. And so this in this time was a major, major thing. Water was collected in cisterns and distributed throughout the city through clay pipes to public fountains and some private residences, right? So you have this idea that if you were important enough, these clay pipes could be made to come to your house. But that was pretty rare because this was a major undertaking, and it wasn't like we could just manufacture pipe and lay pipe easily today from house to house. You couldn't do that. These large clay pipes had to be made to get water. And so it was difficult, but if you were rich enough, you could have it done. Aren't you glad you live today? Where, hey, have an indoor toilet's fine. It's not, but you don't have to go to the city toilet. We're going to see in a moment where they have these places where you would go. And or how about bathhouses or these things? No, you can have water at your house. It's fine. Clean water at that. Several public buildings dominated the civic forum. I don't know what that word is. Prytaneion was the site of the city's sacred hearth. The symbolic fire kept perpetually burning. There was a, I guess, from history they know there was a kind of a perpetual flame kept there, going perhaps to do something with Artemis or Diana, sometimes called the goddess Diana. Now, as a city of the Citadel, as a symbol of the city's hospitality, it was the place that state dinners were held and for dignitaries entertained. It also remained a place for the worship of several traditional Greek gods and goddesses. Descriptions on the pillars record the names of the priests or the curatai who served both in his building and in the cult of Artemis. Now, you can't see it from a distance, but you can kind of see some very faded engravings. So the priests who worked here, evidently, they think it's the priests who worked there, had their names engraved, maybe those who served well or those who served a long time. I know we have plaques in our ordained time, right, where if someone has some particular service or outstanding service, they get recorded. In this day, it was done by stone, right? And so you had the idea that if someone served for a long time, their name might be on these columns. Go on and says, this is one of the city centers where you have gatherings to discuss things publicly. Perhaps this or another one is where there was a riot for Paul, or when there was a riot, Paul was brought to, in Acts 19, Paul was brought to the center of town where they discussed it as a large group, right? And there was it was kind of like an unlawful riotous assembly, which if you read Acts 19 again, there was a city servant or a public official that said, listen, we can't have these unlawful assemblies and riots. These are bad. We'll get in trouble for this. We got to remember who we are. We're the Ephesians. We have the great temple of Diana here. We have to act like Ephesians, not like rioters over Paul preaching the gospel. Now, he wasn't in defending Paul. He was trying to defend Ephesus about not getting called down for having a riotous thing over the issue. Okay, so if you're through Acts 19, to keep that in mind, it at least it appears from the text that's what's going on there. It says, prominently placed beside the civic forum is an odeon, a small theater suited for musical performances and poetical recitations. The current structure dates from the second century and also served as meeting place from the civic council. It is not known whether it was built over an older odeon that served the same purpose in Paul's time. Okay, this was a newer one, but the one we're going to get to in a second, they think is ancient enough where the Paul would have been taken there. So this is one, this may have been built after Paul's time. This is a place, evidently was an important place for religious cults. Not surprisingly, a temple was to the deified Julius and goddess Roma was erected in the center of a form itself. This doesn't look like much. So take that, goddess Roma. But anyway, ruins that you knew were used for that reason. Now, the Temple of Artemis, the patron goddess of the city, stood next to the Prytaneion. By the turn of this era, the temple had been rededicated to the worship of Julius Caesar or Augustus alongside Artemis. So it was for Artemis, but then when Julius Caesar declared him still to be a god, it was kind of maybe a dual purpose thing, they think. Again, we don't have exact writings that they didn't have an internet back then, so you can't look at things exactly and look a lot. You don't have lots of information about it. You have a few references here and there, or a few tablets which were chiseled to keep some information, but those weren't very wordy, right? So we're kind of piecing things together going back this far. But it appears this was for Artemis and then maybe rededicated later to Julius Caesar or Augustus, who came later. This is a single wide street. Remember, this is a street that goes back, I think, supposed to be to this time period. So they're very well-made stone streets, very thick blocks that made the street. A single column street connected to the civic center, to the commercial center of Ephesus. So this was the main drag, right? And so this is where the kids would get the cars and honk the horns and go around. But this was the place that connected the going down toward the inlet, all the way through the marketplace, through the major city centers, where most business and even most civic things were done. Even the one of the gathering places, like the theaters, would be off this. So it was just one big road through town that was the city center. That's why we think Paul walked these streets, would have seen all these things. This street, called the Curate Street, because it began, I don't want to read these words. This is where shops were. And the priests would be along this area of the street. And the priests would be doing their things here. But when the priests were doing their things or working here, it also had little shops in there. And they think Aquila and Priscilla's tent makers may have had a shop here. Because this is where tradesmen or women would be working in these little inlets built into the side of the hill. These were shops where you would do business, all right, as long with some religious things, like where the priests would hold sway and do their things as well. Make sense so far? I know it's just looking at rocks, but when you think about, this is where Paul walked. This is where he was accused of wrongdoing. This is where he converted people, so many people, that it caused a riot because they didn't like the fact they were losing business to Jesus, really, to Christ. And so in that mindset, I think it's interesting to me that way. This is a statue of someone, I think, who was to a doctor named Alexander, the son of Alexander. So evidently a doctor here who maybe helped with an outbreak of some kind or maybe plague. It doesn't mention the plague in the inscriptions, but remember, you had the Black Death. I'm not sure it ever hit Ephesus, but it popped up a few times in the Roman time period where the Black Death broke out two or three times, and a couple times it was like millions of people dead. So there were a few times outbreaks were huge, other times they were smaller, but this is the time where they didn't have any, what is the common cure now for the Black Plague? You know something? Millions dead. Anybody can fix that, right? It's amazing. And that's one thing where the bacteria that causes that is still around in life today. But it's almost been eradicated completely because take a few pills and you're better. That's just crazy. It's amazing. It's awesome. Praise God for that. And, of course, this is the city bathroom. More practical necessities, the slide says. But these were carved in stone, and great care was put into these because it was a rich city. And you got to have a nice bathroom. That shows you how good your city is by the bathrooms, I guess. No comments on that? None, really? Now, in the street where the priests were, the Curate Street, this is an example of a townhouse being unearthed. So, of course, you don't see all the house or what was on the walls. In fact, the beams itself are put there to kind of tell us what it would have looked like, right? So this isn't, they didn't unearth the young beams, right? They put some beams there to kind of show what the house would kind of look like, or at least recreate part of it. But you can look at the tile work, right? This was a rich city. This was a city where there's a lot of trade, a lot of very large city here. So you had a lot of money poured in. There were very rich people here who had a lot of means. There were murals. In fact, they've recovered some of the murals, and they're still, the colors are vibrant still on some of the tile pieces, which were, of course, the tile pieces were baked in high heat. So the color that they had that came out of it, they kept that color, right? It's not like if you just paint something, the paint fades over time, doesn't it? But if something is baked that way, the color remains a lot longer. And so you can actually see some of that. I think that's just amazing. to see it come to life after such a long time. This is an example of a commercial center in Ephesus called the Agora or Marketplace near the harbor. So not far from the harbor was the Agora, the giant, the very large marketplace which they were known for. And you went up the further and you got into the civic center more. But this was a large place. And these are the Agora gates, which would go into the large marketplace. It was known for its very large market. It was like the Mall of America, right? It was a place where you could go. It was a ginormous place by their standards. And it has these giant, very ornate, expensive gates for the time. And you would enter this, go into this Agora. Now, this might also help them police who got in, who didn't get in, right? And so this is a place where official would be in, where you gained official entry into the marketplace. On the north side of the Agora was a path to the harbor. The chief cause of Ephesus' economic importance and growth. A wide street led past the storehouses and more avenues of vendors and businessmen to the harbor itself. So, again, this path to the harbor where you get goods in and out, and you had them to sell at the marketplace. And this is a picture of where the ships came in, but now in this picture it's full of silt. So they don't have to go there to get goods into the area anymore. They have larger harbors, and we have cars, and so you don't have to go by way of sea to an inlet to get goods to a place. You can take it to the main harbor and take it by truck to different places very quickly, right? So I know, and we lived in a place called Vider, which is on the coast. The Vider is on the water, sort of, but it's not like Corpus Christi where you have these big ships coming and going or by there. Vider was on the water, like a mile in, really, right? Was it? But what we had in town, there was a harbor in Vider, but it was basically an inlet with very shallow water. Small boats you could get in and out, like if you wanted to go out and just fish, or maybe if you wanted, I guess, ski or something. So small boats with shallow, they're called drafts, right? Shallow drafts? Is that what it's called? Any fishermen here? The draft of a boat, is that right? And so it had those, but it couldn't have the bigger boats because it wasn't deep enough. But you could, in the ancient world even, it's known that they would, even at this time and before this, would take boats through and kind of go down and dip some of the silt out to keep it from silting so it could stay fairly deep for larger boats to come in with more goods, right? Small boats can't carry many goods. Big boats can, at least by their standards. Bigger boats still needed more of a draft, so they would clean out the inlets if they wanted ships to come there with the goods. Isn't that amazing? Are you excited? Well, it was a big deal at the time. And this is a, you can't really read it, but this was an inscription slab, which was about the size of a human being, about the size of a person, and it had detailed rules of customs and harbor regulations and penalties for smuggling and other infractions. So this would be a large thing that you would read going by it. Again, it's weathered now, so you can't really read it. Even kind of close up on it, you can kind of tell maybe there was inscriptions, sort of. But this would have been a place where at least they can tell from their high-tech, looking back in time, machines that you can kind of see these were inscriptions about rules and regulations for the harbor. All right. At the top of Harbor Street, the street where the harbor is, there stands a great theater of Ephesus. It's possible that the city council used this as a meeting place prior to the construction of the Odeon. We have another picture here where it talks more about Paul. This may be the place that there was the great rite in Acts 19. All right. And so if you read Acts 19 and see the rite, you can say, oh, I've seen a picture of that place, right? At least the place they think it would have been, because if it was large, this is a dwelling, when Paul's time, this was the place, right? So if there is a place where people would gather to meet and fuss about something, it would be here. And so, again, the thing that people are trying to kill Paul here, and he was here trying to defend himself, and someone steps in and try and keep them from having a riot where someone dies is, again, it colors the history quite a bit. I used to hate history. When I was in high school, I hated history class morning. During history class, I would write my sneakers, right? Remember when kids wrote our sneakers with pen? My generation, right? And so with history class, you kind of put your foot up in your lap and you kind of get to take your pen out and write on your Nike swoosh. Remember the Nike swoosh? You'd write things on it. Just me? Y'all are squares. But anyway, that was history class for me. But the more older I get, the more I realize, hey, this is actually makes things come alive a bit to realize some of the facts of history and how they fit into things you see around you, right? And so likely the place Acts 19 took place is this theater, this great theater of Ephesus. And that's what we have. Any questions or comments? I enjoy this kind of stuff, so. Right? And the big columns, the big columns, and the thing, the big columns made things two story. That's how you did it. Think of the money. We can go and get some PVC pipe and get water, fix a busted thing in the house, and a few dollars. But to have these massive clay pipes made, and then to have them fit together, because you perfectly, to where you wouldn't lose all the water you put in the pipe to get to where it's going. The idea of the manpower behind that tells you how rich and opulent Rome was. In Rome, an entire region was built on slavery, right? So they would go conquer people and bring the people back and have them be slaves, and that was your... You were now owned, right? And I heard someone talk today about how America was the first place of slavery was talking about black slavery in America, which is bad. But it was saying the black slavery in America was like it's the worst it's ever been in modern history. Or they could say even go back very long that America was worse than Europe or anywhere else. But think about Rome. Those ancient places, you were owned by somebody else, so you would be treated however they want to treat you. You were their property. You were a person of the same skin color even, but you were now theirs, and they could do with you what they wanted. And we go back even further into Jewish slavery. In Jewish slavery, we talked about this before, when Moses gives regulations about Jewish slavery, they're not slaves in the sense we think today, or even Rome. Jewish slavery was, I will sell myself into your service for a certain amount of time for a certain amount of money, right? And so, but there were laws how you treated slaves. And again, really it's more like indentured servants, not the slaves. Slaves is, in the Roman Empire, you're conquered, you're brought in. If you want to live, you have to do certain things, and you don't get paid anything, really. You get to eat and live. That's about it. But it's very different kind of mindset. Laodicea. Yeah, that is when I read that, all kinds of light bulbs went on, right? Laodicea had two different aqueducts coming in, and when he said, you know, they're hot and they're cold, I'll spew out of my mouth. I never understood that, and historically, you kind of make up what that might mean, but they had water that came in from cold springs from the mountains, or rather from the mountains, so you have snow springs that came to Ephesus a couple miles away. These aqueducts would go sometimes a couple miles, not very far. And they would have cold water from the mountains, from the snow melting snow. But they also had water come from hot springs. So hot spring water had its own uses. It was important for maybe for bathing or washing or other things. And so Laodicea was a very unique place where they had spring-fed hot spring water and cold water from the mountains come in. And so you had hot or cold water in Laodicea. It's amazing, right? So when Jesus said, you need either hot or cold, that was a reference they would understand very, very, very readily, right? And so that's pretty amazing. Anything else? Any questions or comments? We're going to go ahead and it's time to take a short break and come back with a devotional and have a song and a prayer for our post-class devotional, all right? All right, thank you for your time.